Sesha Prabhu has asked us to begin with this bhajan by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Two-part bhajan to be sung early in the morning. Udila, it's called Arunadaya Bhajan, or Arunadaya Kirtan, which means when the sun's rising. Udilo Arunam Purababhaje Vijamani Gora Mane Jage Udila Vakata Samuha Loya Sate Gela Nagara Vraje Tattai Tattai Pajoloko Gana Gana Tahe Janjera Ro Preme Tala Tala Sonara Anga Charam Menu Purabhaje Kunda Madhava Yadavahari Bole no Bolo Re Badana Bori Kunda Madhava Yadavahari Bole no Bolo Re Badana Bori Michi Nidabase Gelore Rate Divasa sarira saje Vishenita vashe Kedore hati Divasa sarira saje E monadu labba manava deha Payaki korobava nakeha Ebinabajile Jashoda Sutta Charame Pori Velaje Udita Tapanam Hoylo Astam Dina gelo bole hoy de biasta. Tabe kino ede alasa hoy. Nabaja hridoya laje. Jivana Nitya Janharasa Tahe Nana Vida Vipadava Tahe Nana Vida Vipadava Namasraya Kore Jatane Tumi Taka panaka je
Namaskarya kori tata ne tumi Akara panaka je
Jivera kalyanam sadhanakam
Jagate Yase Madhuryanam. Avidya Timira Tapana Rupe Ridda Gagane Virache Tapana Rupe Ridda Gagane Virache Krishna Nama Shuddha Koryapan Durayo Bhakati Vinoda Pran Nama Bina Kichu Nahi Kowara Chauda Bhuvanama Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole. Kota Nidra, Chao Maya, Disha Chira Bole. Bhaji Bobo Liya Eshe Sangsara Vitori Buila Rohi Lay to me Avidya Rabore Tomare loite ami Hoinu avatara Ami vina bandhuara ke yaj se tomara Neche aushadhi maya nashe baro lagi Hari Nama Mahamantra Allow to me Magi Hari Nama Mahamantra Allow to me Magi Vinoda Prabhu Charane podiya Charane podiya Se Hari Nama Mantra Loi lo magiya Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare. Jago Haribo, 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 go Haribo, Miss Jago. Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya
Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino, Jaya Bhakti Vino.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
You have a mic, you can just start reading the translations from
translation. When the rising sun appeared in the east, the jewel of the twice born Lord Gaurasundar awakened, and taking his devotees with him, he went all over the countryside, towns and villages, and played the mridanga, and the cymbals chimed in time. Lord Gauranga's shimmering golden feature danced, and his footbell jingled. All the devotees chanted the name Mukunda, Madhava, Yadava, and Hari, their mouths being filled with the vibrations. They would announce to the still sleeping people, "You spend your nights uselessly, sleeping, and your days decorating your bodies. You have achieved such a rare human body, but you do not care for this gift. You remain not serving the darling of Yashoda and slowly fall through your last moments to death. With every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost. Then why do you remain idle and not serve the Lord of the heart? This temporary life is full of various miseries. Take shelter of the holy name as your only business. To penetrate the darkness of ignorance and bless everyone's heart, the holy name has risen like the shining sun. Drink the pure nectar of the holy name. There is nothing but the name to be had in the 14 words. It has filled the soul of Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur."
Lord Gauranga is calling, "Wake up, sleeping souls. Wake up, sleeping souls. How long will you sleep in the lap of the witch called Maya? You have forgotten the way of devotional service and are lost in the world of birth and death. I have descended just to save you. Other than myself, you have no friend in this world. I have brought you the medicine that will wipe out the disease of illusion from which you are suffering. Take this Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur says, "I follow the Lord's feet, having taken shelter, this Maha Mantra."
Hare Bol. Very beautiful bhajan. Thank you for that. And it's a good way to introduce the topic of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is his appearance day. And really, he's such a great person, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and what he contributed not only to Vaishnavism, but to the world in general and to the society that he lived in. It's just tremendous contributions. And I think next Monday you're having Bhakti Vikas Swami here, and he compiled, of course, this three-volume encyclopedic type of work on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, and then when you throw in the fact that Wednesday is the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's sannyas. Really three really extraordinary persons that we have a deep connection with in our sampradaya. And just to to know the greatness of these persons is and feel that closeness to them is very special in our own lives, and it should be. I don't know, how much does everybody know about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur here? A lot or a little or varies? Little? Well, that's one of the advantages of celebrating the appearance and disappearance days of these great acharyas, is because we get at least twice a year a chance to go specifically focus in their lives and go over some of their accomplishments. So we'll try to do that a little bit today. We're fortunate that your father put together this little book called The Seventh Goswami by Rupa Vilas Das. I think all over the movement, this is a sort of a standard fare on these appearance and disappearance days. So we're greatly indebted to Rupa Vilas Prabhu for doing that. Does anybody know why this book is called The Seventh Goswami? Does anybody have any idea what's all that all about, Naveen? Right. After the six Goswamis. Six Goswamis have many accomplishments, but let's focus on two of them. The first one was that they... The first one was that they contributed an ocean of literature, devotional literature. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Satdharma Samstapa Ko. They went through all the Vedic literatures and they brought out this bhakti, devotion to Krishna. And they produced volumes of literature that we depend on daily in our devotional service and continue to enlighten the world about bhakti, about love, specifically of Radha and Krishna, being the highest goal of life. Now, that was one accomplishment. The other accomplishment was that Lord Chaitanya sent them to Vrindavan, and they excavated all the lost holy places. It's amazing how this material world can cover things over. I mean, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appeared in this world and executed his pastimes in Vrindavan, but somehow or another they had become lost. Doesn't that seem like a contradiction? the material energy is subservient to the spiritual energy, and when that spiritual energy descends in its highest form to this planet in Sri Vrindavan Dham, still, in the course of time, those places of the Lord's pastime became lost. And so the Goswamis, six Goswamis, they went to Vrindavan and they excavated all the holy places there. And again, that's something we enjoy to this very day. If we go to Vrindavan, we can go to those places that they have indicated. Here's where Krishna did this pastime. Here's where Krishna did that pastime. So those are two of the accomplishments of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And again, the material energy acts very powerfully. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself appeared in this world only 500 or so years ago. Yet, within 200 years of his appearance, again, the Supreme Personality of God, within 200 years of his appearance, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had practically become lost. And so then, as Naveen indicates, there appeared the great personality, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and this book is called The Seventh Goswami after a newspaper reporter says in here, if I can find it. Oh, come on. I must be able to find it. Anyway, there's a newspaper reporter that says he wrote a letter to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he said that, oh, okay. Shishir Kumar Ghosh, who is the founder and editor of the Amar Bazar Patrika, which I believe still is publishing in Calcutta, he wrote to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I have not seen the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, but I consider you to be the seventh Goswami. And so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the seventh Goswami because he did the same thing as the six Goswamis. He produced an ocean of devotional literature, and he revived the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which amazingly, 200 years after his appearance, had essentially become lost. And so, accomplishing that work on behalf of the Lord, he's called the seventh Goswami. Now, I think initially what I'd like to do is just give you some statistics about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, because that sort of approaches some of the tremendous nature of his accomplishments. He was born in 1853. September 2nd, 1838, in Bir Nagar, which is near Krishnanagar, which is near Sridhar Mayapur. And he left this world in 1914. So during the course of that time, let's take a look at some of the tremendous work he did. One thing is, does anybody know how many children he had? He had a big family. According to this book, which is by Sukhavaktas, Hindu Encounter with Modernity, which is an academic study of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had 14 children. 8 boys and 6 girls, beginning with the first child born in 1860 and the last child being born in 1891. So he had a big family. And also the works of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just the span in years of his literary contributions, which are many, beginning in 1849. There are actually some that are undated here, arranged by year, by Sukhavaktas, undated, but the first dated was a Bengali verse in praise of the village deity Ula Chandi. That was in 1849. And the last of his works, written works, 12 poems of 12 Sanskrit verses with Bengali translations and explanations, Shravaniyama Dvasadasaka, and in 1907. So his works spanned some almost 60 years, his literary contributions. So, anybody else have any other statistics about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur they find interesting from his life to know? Balaba Sainu.
He was the first Vaishnava in modern history to introduce Lord Chaitanya's teachings. In 1896, he sent a book to McGill University in Canada, same year that Srila Prabhupada appeared in this world. And that was the first time that Krishna consciousness through the Gaudiya Vaishnava Pradaya, Sampradaya, had made its appearance in the Western world. First time since Lord Chaitanya's appearance.
Right. Also, very significant date in the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, sending Sri Chaitanya his life and precepts to not only McGill University, but other universities around the world. As well, in around the Western world, he sent that book. course, there's a sort of a unfortunate statistic that goes along with that. Sending is that fortunate and unfortunate. Of course, the devotees, early devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, found that book at McGill University Library. But the unfortunate thing is they took it out rather than leaving any connection. That's particularly something that bothers Kalakant and I, because our whole job was putting them in. Putting Srila Prabhupada's books in there, and someone took Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book out. At any rate, yes, that's a very significant date. Yes. Right. That's one of the things that we'll read a little bit about today. Discovering the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's particularly important. And how he did that, I think, is what I want to try to bring that out. It's an interesting. Any other thing, Naveen? Right. Daily schedule. We're going to go over that too. I like that. Every time I go over the daily schedule. All right. Yes, these all the devotional songs that he wrote. But okay, let's start with just a little bit about who Bhaktivinoda Thakur was as a person, and describe his life a little bit. Actually, he had a very hard life, and I want to point out some things about how that affected his later devotional behavior. Of course, he was born in a very aristocratic family, and that means he had a lot of wealth, and he was born into a wealthy family in Bengal. Actually, I was listening to Bhakti Charuswami describe his early birth, and he was describing that when the British established Calcutta, they did so by purchasing two villages. One of them was Govindapur, and I can't remember the name of the other, but they built a fort there. That's the first big buildup of Calcutta. They built this fort, and one of the villages they purchased to build that fort was Govindapur, and that village actually belonged to the ancestral family of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Just to give you some idea of what kind of situation he was born into in life. And so very aristocratic family, although he had a hard childhood. And I think one theme that's constant throughout the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the illnesses that he faced and his family members faced. Let me read to you something here about that. Okay. He had an elder brother. But one day they went someplace and ate some impure food prepared by a well-meaning relative. Later that night, Kedarnath, that's the previous name of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath's elder brother, Kalidada, became ill with cholera. A local doctor declared it very serious, and Kedarnath and Kalidada set out for their home by palanquin. By 8 o'clock the next morning, they arrived at home, but his elder brother left the world. He died of the cholera that contracted by eating like that. When he was 11 years old, his father died of an illness. And subsequent to that, the family fortunes began to decline, so much so that he had to, basically they lost all of their wealth. Their family lost all of their wealth due to the death of his father. Later, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur married, his first child died, and then his wife also died. And so near and dear relatives dying was something that was a constant theme in his early life. When we talk about those 14 children, I believe all 14, maybe with the exception of the first one, were born from a second wife. So he had a very difficult childhood in that regard, and he often had to move from one place to another due to the death of his father. And so how that played out in his life, later in his life, let me just discuss that now. You know that later, as a magistrate, he was in Jagannath Puri, and there he confronted a person who was claiming to be Vishnu, Vishikashena. Maybe you've heard the story. This is a famous one about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He confronted him. This man, he was a mystic yogi, and he was claiming to be Vishnu. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, both on behalf of the British government as a magistrate, as well as a devotee of the Lord, not standing for any kind of pretenders like this, he went and confronted him. And during that time, what did the yogi do? That's significant. Yeah, his whole family, isn't it? By his mystic ability, he made Bhaktivinoda Thakur's whole family ill, gravely ill. Now, for someone who had lost a father in a young age, lost one's own child, lost one's brother and other family members to illness, wouldn't it make you a little hesitant when you're confronting this person and you're attacked in a place that's very sensitive and where you've experienced great sorrow and grief in your life? And your family member is becoming ill, gravely ill. But as an example of his dedication, his complete surrender to Krishna, he did not back down one bit from his challenge to this mystic yogi, who everyone else was completely afraid of, including all the British government with all their soldiers and everything. I think it's described actually when he went there to confront him at night, he went out in the forest and he was out there with his followers and there was a fire and things like that. And the British soldiers were hiding. They didn't want to go, you know, confront them. They were like hiding behind. So he faced that great personal danger, and without deviating or wavering for a minute, he challenged this yogi, even saying that, you know, let his family members die, just this pretender, this offender to Krishna cannot be allowed to go. So that's just an example of, from his life, you know, the experience, his life experiences and how they played out in terms of challenging this Vishikashena, which I think is a particularly important. So let's move on to, well, let me just talk a little bit about his childhood, because in his childhood he wrote a biography, autobiography of himself, and then he describes some things about his childhood that I wanted to read here. He says, because sometimes we hear, and I think it's important to understand Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because we hear about how he sort of became a devotee, you know, that he wasn't a devotee, but then he became a devotee by coming in contact with the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But let's see in his early life, you know, how much of that is lila or how much of that is true. He says that when there was recitation of the Mahabharata, Ramayana, etc. at the old house, I would go to hear. I like to hear about Hanuman crossing the ocean to Lanka and about the demoness Simhika. The honorable reader would speak with such accompanying gestures, and in my mind a great love would arise. I would make a regular habit of going to hear the reading after school. And so he had this attraction for hearing about Krishna, and specifically mentions this demon Simhika. Does anybody know which one she was when Hanuman was crossing? Yeah. Which one was she? There was several.
She might have got to
She was the one that opened her mouth real wide, I think. You know, she had to swallow up Hanuman like that. So he liked that story. He also says, he said, sometimes, in hopes of getting some nice prasad, I would accept an invitation to eat. In some homes, I would get good dal along with vegetable curry and rice. In other homes, I would get khichdi and dal cooked with jackfruit and other things. So obviously, he liked those things. Let's look at his work schedule. Because how old was he when he wrote that? I think he was 8 or 9 years old when he's recalling those things, when he was 8 or 9 years old. Of course, one of the things about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, you know, he worked in the British government. He worked in a very responsible position as a magistrate. And there are some dates here also, and some very interesting, if you get a chance to read this book, it's also nice. It has some extracts from his work record. So it actually, you know, indicates, you know, what he was doing at particular times. And as a lawyer myself, I always, you know, thought it would be nice to go back and, you know, read one of his decisions or something like that, one of his court decisions, but I haven't had a chance. But this book does contain some of his work schedule. But it talks about the years that he worked for the British government. And considerable career. His working years were in Orissa, 1858 to 1874. And he was in the government service in Orissa in 1858. In Puri in 1870. So, sort of place him in history. We know that he was a magistrate in Puri, and so therefore he was in charge of the Jagannath Puri temple. And what famous number is associated with the Jagannath temple and Bhaktivinoda Thakur being there as the magistrate? Does anybody know? It was a famous number. And I think it's 54, isn't it? 54. 54 what? Yeah, he regulated this. There's 56? but 54 times a day. 54 times a day. When he arrived as a magistrate in Puri, the temple was in a very not well-managed kind of situation, Jagannath Puri temple. Therefore, again, in his dual role as a magistrate, being in charge, governmentally being in charge of the temple, as well as a devotee of the Lord, he worked with the temple to regulate the temple, to fix the temple management, and he established this 54 offerings per day to Lord Jagannath, which I believe are going till today. In the temple, it's still the method in which they worship there. And so he had that impact during his time as the magistrate there in around 1870, according to this work, when he was there. And of course, taking advantage of being the wife of the magistrate in 1874, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born as Bimal Prasad, which son was he? He was born in 1874 as the 5th son and 7th child of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bimal Prasad, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and we know that his appearance day is in around February. The Rath Yatra festival is in June, July. So that year, that small baby, the cart stopped in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, which is right on the main road there. You can still go there. And that's one of the things about these acharyas. They're such great personalities. They did such wonderful things to spread Krishna consciousness. And they're very accessible. They're right there. We can go to his house. I've been there, to his house in Puri, where his wife went out with the baby, Bimal Prasad, 5 or 6 months old, and placed him on the at the feet of Lord Jagannath on the cart, and the garland fell down surrounding him. You can go to that place where all these things happened. And so that all took place during this 1870-1874 time period when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a magistrate of the temple there, a magistrate in Puri and in charge of the temple. Okay, so I wanted to mention a little bit about the discovering Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. And this is interesting because the way in which he discovered the birthplace, it's because it's different than the way in which the Goswamis uncovered the holy places in Vrindavan. They uncovered the holy places in Vrindavan on the basis of their spiritual vision. And although that is also very much a part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace being discovered by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there are other factors that are involved. Bhaktivinoda Thakur being an educated man in this world, what he did was combine his worldly education with the spiritual insight of the Vaishnavas, and in that way discovered the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let me read to you how this happened. In order to substantiate his growing conviction, Thakur began to conduct an investigation utilizing old manuscripts of Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakti Ratnakar, and Narhari Thakur's Navadvipa Parikrama Paddhati, as well as antique maps of the district. In particular, he found an old map from the time of Ganga Govinda Singh, who was the Nabi Dwan of the Khalsa and founder of Paipara Raja family, which flourished later in the 18th century. So he consulted maps. He consulted maps in addition to the scripture, and in addition to having things confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji. And I think that that's particularly interesting. And for me, it doesn't at all make it a mundane discovery, but rather it indicates that how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur throughout his life exemplified this idea of utilizing everything in the service of Krishna. I mean, he was a family man that had 14 children, that was a government magistrate. But those things were used to further his devotional service, not to hinder his devotional service. He was educated in the British schools, in the British ways. But he worked for the British government. But those things were assets he used for furthering Krishna consciousness. They did not separate him from Krishna consciousness. And I think this is particularly important for us. I mean, many of you are students at the university. And you could see your life, your study as mundane, or you can see it as something that can be utilized like Bhaktivinoda Thakur utilized things to push forward one's Krishna consciousness. And so I find that this is a very good example in discovering the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya that He used these things. So by utilizing these things, the name Sri Mayapur was found on a map to indicate the site of what became to be known as Bali Dighi. He ascertained a good deal about the different villages of the area from his research with the manuscripts and maps and from local villagers as well. He found to his great astonishment that the town on the western bank of the Ganges, now called Navadvip, was actually a place of less than 100 years standing, and that there were still people living there who declared that in their youth they had moved to the new town from the old site of Baladangdighi. And so his research, he found that actually the Mayapur, birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was on the other side of the Ganges, so he went there, and as we know, that was confirmed by taking Jagannath Das Babaji there, who was very old. I think it's described, he was 140 years old, Bhakti Srimara said. And he had to be carried in a basket by his disciples, but he went there, and when he saw the birthplace, what did he do? He jumped out of the basket and started dancing, so the birth site was confirmed. And again, this is a place where we can go this very day and to the birthplace there and see the temple built there by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Later in his career, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was transferred to, he asked for a transfer to the Navadvip area, and finally he was posted there. And he built a house across the Jalangi River from the birth site of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the current ISKCON property there. Again, in this book, there are some very nice pictures that of that house where you can go to see where he actually lived and several things that he used when he was there. There's a fan there, for instance. He invented this fan that ran by kerosene. You know, you put the kerosene in it and it burns and it runs a fan. So he invented that. And that fan is still there, along with some of the books and tables and things like that that he used. His samadhi is also there. And so, again, these are very holy places and we have access to them by visiting the Holy Dham. So, and that's where he had the vision. That porch where he went out on his veranda and he saw the vision of the temple there. You can go out on that veranda and see. And what do you see when you look across there? You see Prabhupada Samadhi, yes. And hopefully you'll see a big temple there. In 6 years, Ambarish says. The deities will be moved in 6 years. So that's very inspiring that they were so close to such great spiritual personalities. Okay, so we wanted to look at his daily schedule. Everyone finds that a favorite, so we'll read that. And then maybe a little bit about his character, again, what type of a person he was. We know what type of a Vaishnava he was from that story of Bhishikashena, very determined and not willing to give up, even put oneself in personal danger, but not give up one's principles. And so we'll read a little bit about his character also, what kind of person he was in dealings with people. But here's his daily schedule. Lalit Prasad Thakur, who's another son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, born after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I think he's born in 1880. Lalit Prasad Thakur, and the devotees met him in the early days. He was still living at that time. And so devotees used to go and see him, Lalit Prasad. Lalit Prasad Thakur, in his notes on his father's life, described the Thakur's daily schedule while he was staying in Jagannath Puri. He was never idle, being always engaged in the service of the Lord. Between 7:30 and 8 o'clock p.m., he would go to bed. He would then rise just before 10 p.m., light his oil lamp, and write books until 4 a.m. Then he would again rest for a maximum of a half an hour. At 4:30, he would wash his mouth, face, sit down, and chant on his beads. He never showed his beads to anyone, but would chant on them constantly as time permitted. At 7 a.m., he answered all correspondence. At 7:30 a.m., read various religious and philosophical works. And at 8:30 a.m., he received visitors, if any, or else continued to read until 9:30. At that time, he would walk back and forth on the veranda of his house, contemplating different religious questions and solving them in his mind. Just see how he was absorbed. This was his pleasure, to walk back and, you know, debate in his mind these different philosophical ideas. Now, always deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes he would solve them aloud as if preaching to some unseen guest. He would then rest briefly from 9:30 a.m. to 9:45 a.m., then take his bath and breakfast, which usually consisted of, does anybody know? Half a quart of milk, two chapatis, and some fruit. At 9:55 a.m., the Thakur would don his uniform and leave for court in his carriage. As a magistrate, he wore coat and pants. On his neck were six strands of large tulsi beads. He was resolute in his court decisions and would decide a case immediately, not tolerating any humbug. He did his business and left. Bhakti Chuswami was explaining on the tape that he would leave the court at around 3, and usually the office hours till 5. So one day his supervisor came to him and said, "Why are you leaving at 3? You know, we're supposed to work till 5. And he said, "Well, you want me to accomplish the work that's given. Is that correct?" "That's correct. That's what his supervisor said." "Well, if I finish the work by 3, then why should I stay till 5? And so the man had to agree, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very productive and did indeed finish his work like that. So he shaved his head monthly and never cared what anyone thought of it. The lawyers and Englishmen were astonished by the Thakur's capacity for work. At 10 a.m. court began. He would hear between 30 and 50 cases per day, yet he finished by 1 p.m. What took other magistrates 1/2 hour, he finished in 5 minutes. He took another 2 minutes to write the judgment in detail. Some of his British superiors became envious and tried to discourage him, but he was not affected. At 1 p.m., he went home, refreshed himself, and then returned for work from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Every evening, after his court duties, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would translate some Sanskrit religious works into Bengali by dictating it to a secretary. Then there was an evening bath and meal consisting of a little rice, 2 chapatis, and another 1/2 quart of milk. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur worked with a pocket watch so that everything he did was on schedule. Despite his heavy domestic and official responsibilities, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's every moment was embellished with an intense desire to render service to the Lord. So he had a pocket watch. You can see him looking at it, pulling it out of his uniform coat pocket and checking it. So, are we ready to take up that kind of a schedule in our daily lives? It's quite amazing. I think if we can just be consistent and steady in what we're doing, that'll be a step in the right direction for us. Empowered personalities like that. Okay. So his character, you want to lead? Does anybody have any recollections of some stories about his character? Yes. Do you want to take the mic?
Just one archaeological find I remember reading about, that after he had gone to the place where Lord Chaitanya appeared, I believe it was they found a deity there that was actually belonging to Jagannath Mishra, I think it was.
Right.
That also confirmed that was Lord Chaitanya's appearance site as well.
So right.
Archaeological find, too.
Right. When they were excavating, digging to start the foundation for the temple, they found the family deity of Jagannath Mishra. And so that further confirmed the site. Yes. Yosas? Right.
And then he showed to Bhaktisaraswati Thakur also, and then he began searching the maps and confirmed that was indeed the place of the Prabhupada.
Right, right. So he had the mystical vision of the birthplace, some bright light coming from there. And it, again, confirmed by the maps and the research and the sadhus like that. Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Yes, you have a question?
So I had a question about, like, sometimes I often hear that we say that we are students and we should follow, like, you know, some, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, like he had his job and he has his work. So as you're saying, he engaged everything in Krishna service. Sometimes we hear, like, some people say, like, oh, he was a pure devotee, you know, he can do it. Like, he was, and only because he was in, like, I don't know, yoga maya or something, that's why he had a job, but otherwise he was pure devotee. So the question is, like, but he's an acharya, we should follow his steps. So how can we actually follow his steps?
Well, I think there's a difference between imitating and following. And I think that the fact that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur displayed his pastimes here in the Grihastha Ashram is a lesson for us that he was involved in the world and he had a job and did those things is a lesson for us about how we need to sort of the mentality with which we may engage in those things. That not that it's not a struggle or it's just Leela for him, but no, that he was determined. Let's take just if we can just take that one thing from his life, that he was very determined not to be distracted from Krishna consciousness, to engage everything in Krishna's service, and that we should also do that. Not that, oh, well, it's just, you know, Leela and not something that it required determination and endeavor on his behalf. No, he showed us determination and endeavor on his behalf so that we can also manifest that same kind of thing following him. Not just we don't do that and we just dismiss it. That gets to some of these things about character that I want to read also that I think are important. Yes.
I was wondering, like, if you can tell something about her, I mean, his wife, because we never hear anything about his wife. And as a grihastha, it is very important how your wife is supporting, whether you are in devotional service or not, because that affects a lot.
Well, there are pictures of his wife in this book here. And she's shown with a japamala. She's chanting. She followed her husband in that regard. Yes. Yes. And so the read this one, you know, and you'll find some. Yes.
The upstairs, this really nice book, and I was reading it, and it said that she was on her deathbed, you know, and Bhaktisiddhanta came, and she was saying, like, please spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the world, has like, and do this. Like, that was her last wish, you know. So she was a really saintly person as well.
Right. Saintly person, supporting her husband and encouraging her son.
Nice.
Huh? Yeah. Huh? More than one child died?
Yeah. I was wondering, it doesn't seem like there's any family time in his schedule. And also, do we know anything about like Bhaktisiddhanta's brothers and sisters? Were they also great?
Well, Lalit Prasad is... Lalit Prasad, we know something about his spiritual stature. As I said, he was leading that life. The rest of the brothers and sisters, I don't know. Maybe it's in that volume, those volumes by Bhakti Prakash Swami put together. I don't know.
Talking about his own personal health, and
yes.
I remember reading that and very inspired by it because throughout his whole life he was struggling with a lot of physical ailments himself, and yet he remained aloof from them and remained Krishna conscious. So it was like really inspiring to see that even in such an ill condition that he was transcendental.
Yeah, that's a fact. He was also in poor health for a lot of his life, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, but I mean, no time for family. I don't know. I don't know. I would have to probably try to do some more research on that to find out more about his family life and the family time. But there are indications that he did, you know, have those as part of his life. I mean, there are photos in here of him pictured with his children, but I mean, there's one of the with his sons particularly. He's pictured with them, and Bhakti Truswami in his biography of Srila Prabhupada, where he covers life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he shows him interacting, you know, regularly with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, yes, go ahead.
Weekends.
Weekends?
Weekends.
They had weekends in those days?
Even then.
maidservant, I believe, that was really integral part, that it was described that she also had children of her own, but spent a lot of time there at the house with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and was just like a mother to him. And in that book, he describes what a great associate that she was as well in helping him in
his
life.
So that regularly they can send him a train filled with mails.
Also, I heard that was built so he could get, you know, to facilitate his getting to the court on a timely manner. But let's just read a little bit here about his character. I think it's important. Thakur Bhaktivinoda was so charitably disposed that no one ever went away from his home disheartened, and he who once called on him was sure to meet him again with a smiling face. Srila Bhaktivinoda befriended men regardless of their rank, a phenomenon especially visible when he widely preached the holy name. He never bore any grudges, and those who were envious of him or attempted to impede him in his spiritual mission were, in the long run, ashamed of their contact and often came begging for his pardon, which he never refused. His sense of universal brotherhood made him a friend to all, and he was always eager for the benefit of all. Whoever contacted him was immeasurably benefited. The Thakur was never proud of his, and his amiable disposition was a characteristic feature of his life. He never uttered a word that would injure another's feelings, and he never chastised anyone unless he was perfectly confident that he was right to do so for the person's welfare. He is also, there's mentioned somewhere in here about his debt. He never would be in debt. Of course, he was the perfect teetotaler, which means he didn't drink anything. He never chewed betel. He refused to go to a public performance. He never supported the least shadow of immorality and never crossed the threshold of any place which he knew to be immoral. He had a great dislike for theaters, as they were places where public women were brought in to take part in the play. He knew that common people who cared little for religion and who had generally happy-go-lucky days to spend were apt to go astray in the broad wilderness of the world if he himself restrained from showing them the proper way by his own example. The Thakur was always courageous and acted for the welfare of everyone. He kept his personal needs to a bare minimum and led the simplest of lives, avoiding the indulgences of worldly men. So, any final comments on
about his early life? I just wanted to mention how he of course, was born in great wealth and then experienced losing all of the wealth and then all of his supporters. By the time he was maybe 14 or 15 years old, he was married, and he had his wife and his elderly mother to support with nothing. And to make it even worse, everyone thought that they were very rich because they had been rich in the past, but they lost everything. So he had little sympathy from anybody. So he worked many years as a school teacher, just earning 10 rupees a month, and spending it all to just take care of his family members. Just bit by bit, went from being a teacher, then he got some jobs as a tax collector, which he abhorred because it was so corrupt. And because he had such excellent character, the British recognized him and kept promoting him. And that's how he ended up being a magistrate. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that he was just automatically posted at this high position.
That's very good. Anything else? Yes.
I found it interesting how, as a young man, he explored different religious paths and really explored Christianity quite in depth and various other traditions to find what is the essence of religion.
Yeah, actually, I read one quote in here. He particularly liked Jesus Christ. Does anybody know why? Why would he particularly like Jesus Christ? Spiritual master? Well, they're all spiritual people. Yes.
Western savior?
No. Yeah. Yes. It's the bhakti. It was the bhakti that he had attracted him to Jesus Christ. How he preached love of God and things like that. So yes, he was. That's where you get into the whole thing about him becoming a devotee, becoming a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was brought up again in this time in British Indian history, where the British and Western influences were becoming very prominent, especially among the intellectuals, the kind of background that he came from, the intellectuals, the aristocratic people. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings had become lost, covered over by a degraded version, the intellectual people, they didn't want anything to do with Vaishnavism or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so Christian thought and a Brahmano group, which was sort of like combining Hinduism and Christianity, and they became popular among the intelligentsia at that time. And of course, I think that's also an important lesson, because a lot of good thought may be out there in the world, but when you compare them to the fullness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, we see that he's chose that over that other type of goodness, let's say. That's a goodness that was there in the world, the best of Hinduism, the best of Christianity. Quran also he studied. Taking the best of those things and comparing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, are clearly superior in that direction he went in. So that's also a lesson we can learn from his life. Okay, so we better end there. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai.